The next mitzvah is a doozy because of its place in contemporary discourse. We'll try to just learn the Sefer HaChinuch for what he says is the best we can. And that's mitzvah Reish Tes, Shelo Lavo Al Hazcharim. That the 209th mitzvah is not to have relationships, we're addressing a male person, obviously, with another male person. Shelo Lavo Al Hazcharim. Not to have homosexual relations. Shenemar, again talking about the male specifically, female homosexual relations are included in the general idea of Kamasei Eretz Mitzrayim Lo Sasun, that you shouldn't do in the ways of the Egyptians. However, there's no specific negative commandment for it, and therefore there's no Malkus on a Deraisa level for it. And probably the reason is, there are some who indicate that maybe it's not even 100% Daraisa, maybe somewhere between Daraisa, Darabanan, something like that, whatever it is. Probably the reason is that in the Torah, something cannot really be considered relations until there's some type of intercourse. And we have two women, so they, by definition, cannot really have intercourse. They can't insert something into the other one, so therefore, that's not considered real relations, even if it's under the prohibition of just generally doing things that you can't, that are under the purview of what the Egyptians and the Canaanites used to do. It's even that we know that a woman, there are very strict standards for a Kohen Gadol, a regular Kohen Gadol, but especially Kohen Gadol, about what type of woman he's allowed to marry, has to be a virgin, can't even be a widow, and has to be a certain age. So even a woman who has engaged in a lesbian type of activities is allowed to marry a Kohen Gadol, because even though it's not allowed, it's not considered to be anything that permanently affects her status, because again, there's no actual intercourse involved here. The Chos of HaRambam, Zichrono Livracha. Oh, sorry, Vezocher, so it says in the Torah, Shnemar Vezocher lo sishka mishke ve'isha to'evai. You shall not lie with the man in the manners, as we'll discuss in a second why it's in the plural, in the manners that one lies with a woman, it is an abomination. The Chos of HaRambam, Zichrono Livracha, the Rambam says, V'nichpal zehalav bezeho inyan ba'atzmo b'makom acher. This is stated in a different place in the Torah as well, but you didn't know this. So it's not so common knowledge. Dichsiv, V'lo yihye kodesh mi b'nei Yisrael. There shall not be a prostitute, holy, again, kodesh means someone sanctified, not in the positive sense of holy, but somebody set aside for a particular purpose. A kodesh and a kodesha were probably originally types of prostitutes that were, I don't know if you paid them, maybe you didn't pay them, but they originally involved in some sort of worship of idols, other deities. That part of the rite was that one had to have relations with these people who were set aside. So the Ekodesh mi b'nei Yisrael. V'nira ki lo hiskim harav zichron el vracha b'chan. So the Rambam holds that lo Ekodesh mi b'nei Yisrael, that there should not be a male prostitute in the among the children of Israel. Again, it's not addressing a male prostitute who has the services available for women. This is some type of escort. Not that that's permitted, but that's not what this verse is addressing right here. It's somebody who's available for homosexual relations. That the Targum Unklus has a different translation of this pasuk where it says, Lo yeh kodesh mi b'nei Yisrael. Shetirgem velo yisav gavra mi b'nei Yisrael. That a man from the Jewish people shall not take as a wife a maidservant. Perush Shifcha Kenaz. So Shifcha Kenaz, as we mentioned before, is a maidservant who is in between being Jewish and not Jewish. In other words, she was not Jewish, and then she was acquired by a Jewish owner, and she goes to the mikvah. She has some sort of quasi-Yerus, that she becomes sort of semi-Jewish, not a full free Jewish woman, but she has some sort of quasi-gerus, and you're not allowed to marry her, because she's not fully, fully Jewish. So according to the Targum Unklus, so this pasuk is not talking about homosexual relations at all. It's talking about Kodesh is a man, any Jewish man, who considered to be prostituting himself out by marrying a not fully Jewish woman, even though she's a little Jewish. So you might think, oh, so she went to the mikvah once, so you know that's good enough. That's like a regular convert who goes to the mikvah. No, it's not. The Rambam says that that's not what Lo Yeh Kodesh means. The Rambam says Lo Yeh Kodesh is simply an extra, like we have many times in the Torah, like we were talking about before in Parsha Shmini, when we're talking about Kashrus, that this is Sheretz, you're not allowed to eat it, don't 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 eat it. So he says it a gazillion times. It just emphasizes the same thing. So too, since there's a pasuk that says there should not be a kaddish, that just simply tells you that it's emphasizing the idea that Jewish males are not allowed to engage in homosexual relations.
I thought the kaddish and kaddisha were involved in avodah zarah, it's kind of a temple prostitute or something like that.
Yeah,
it wasn't just someone who's not straight commercial proposition, shall we say?
That's why it's called kaddish, probably. But I don't know if the word kaddish used in the Torah is limited to that exactly. It's probably the original. Yes, the original meaning of the word Kadesh and how it was associated and what the Torah has in mind with that word, but it doesn't mean that what it's trying to tell us not to do is limited exclusively to that. You're right. Like it says a gazillion times in the Torah, there repeats itself to emphasize certain points. The Reisi L'Ramban, Zichrono L'Vracha, Nachmanides says, Shelo Yaskim Gamu B'Lav Zeh Matargam. He also has a different understanding of Lo Yeh Kadesh. Aval Yomar Ki Lav De Lo Yeh Kadesh is a totally different concept. Not totally different, but semi different. Yavo L'Hazir Shelo Naniach Lios Beinenu Am HaKadesh Kadesh. It's not an individual prohibition like the Rambam says, just emphasizing the individual prohibition of homosexual relations, but rather it's a prohibition on the whole community of Klal Yisrael, of the Jewish people, that we're not allowed to have kedeshim around with us. The Hu Aisha Mezuman Leos Nishkav Minizkarim Kayadua Mehem Barzos Ishmaelim Adayom. He says, just like you think about in the Arab lands, that they have young men, whatever, who are available, should you wish to, purchase or have some other way or other of attaining their services, that if you wish to have relations with them, then they're available. They walk around, there's set places, storefronts where they're available, whatever, rooms that you can look up in the Yellow Pages, they're available should you want to do it. It's not to private people who, who are nichshal in having a tryst, but it's someone who's specifically set aside and available for this type of activity. So he says that, according to the Ramban, this is a prohibition for the whole Jewish people, that we shouldn't allow such people to operate within our purview. And it's interesting that he gives us an example of that in the Arab lands, this is common. I don't know, that might have been the true in his time. I don't know, in Saudi Arabia today, I don't think they would go for this. They probably would stone them. Really?
No, they just have slave boys, they stone. I mean, in Arab lands.
Yeah, it's an Arab country. Certainly in Afghanistan and, I don't know if they're not for the Arab, but other Muslim countries.
Yeah, according to Islam, it's also usur to...
Really, in Saudi Arabia, they don't. I thought they stone people to death who are
adult couples.
Certainly in Iran, they do.
Really,
somebody taking advantage. Yeah, whatever. I can send you links.
I mean, let's put it this way. for that matter, the Nazi Party was infested with homosexuals, but they had a sort of peculiar idea of who they considered to be somebody who was worth, punishing for it. The active participant was seemed to be, could be excused. The passive one, shall we say, was the...
That's more feminized.
Something
penetrated,
like
whatever. I mean, that was the case in a lot of... that was the case in a lot of cultures. I think in ancient Greece also that was more... it was more degrading to be the passive participant.
Yeah.
But we'll see, in halacha, it doesn't matter which is which. Ubnei Kain, Amar, mi b'nei Yisrael, that it says from the children of Israel, Omar Shein Anachnu Muzhar Mizeh Ba'umo. So why is it said, Lo Yeh Kodesh Mi B'nei Yisrael, not Shu Yeh Kodesh from amongst the Jewish people? Because we're not responsible to make sure that the nations don't have homosexual prostitutes available.
Oh.
Ashim Haya Echa Min Omos Kodesh Ra'afilu B'neinu. Even if, in the land of Israel, perhaps, when it's under Jewish control, so there is a non-Jew who is advertising his services, Lo huzharnu alav, we're not required to get rid of him. The only thing that we're not allowed to have, we can't tolerate in Eretz Yisrael, but anybody doing is avodah zarah, is idol worship. And of course, if somebody, we'll see in a few minutes, that even non-Jews are not allowed to have homosexual relations. So once the person does it, once this person offers the services and somebody accepts the service, then you can administer the appropriate punishment. But in terms of lav per se, that we shouldn't allow someone to operate is not exactly there. It's interesting. You could somebody has a neon sign and is advertising, homosexual brothel, and they're all non-Jews, and you have a whole country run by people in long beards and black coats, and they're that's not necessarily the paradigm of what we want Jews to be. We'll say there, but. If you have a real religious Jews and they just walk by the storefront, oh, Okay. They have, that seems very strange to me. And then, oh, somebody goes into the store. Oh, now we get it. We operate the punishment. That seems very odd. But in any event, maybe it's quieter than what I'm imagining, but it seems very strange. Val Yiksha Alecha, don't have a question. Im Kain, Maize Mikra Nilmad. La Maize Mikra Nilmad, Lav Lenose Shifcha Im Lo Nomar Kedivri Amatar Game. So Sefer Chinuch says, but it certainly is prohibited to marry a non-Jewish maidservant, a Shifcha Knanis. V'shema, so how do we have a source for this if we don't go like what the Targum says? That's from Lo Yekodesh. V'shema Lo Tomar Midichsi V'lo Tischatin Bam. That the general prohibition of marrying, what you might think, what Sefer Chinuch is going to undo your perception in a second, but you might think that it has a general prohibition against intermarriage over here, so that would include non-Jewish maidservants because they're not fully Jewish yet. Ze'eno, this is not true. Sharei Meforish Begimara, L'Shiva Amamin Hudasa. This is talking about only the seven nations that inhabited the land of Israel that were not allowed to have marriage with them. Ve'aleya Mudichsev, Davka Begirusan, Be'elu Begiusan, L'Shaich B'Lashon Chitun. What it's talking about here is even if the seven nations convert, you know, really, we're supposed to get rid of them. They're supposed to leave the land of Israel. They're not supposed to have anything to do with the Jewish people anymore. But so should one of them manage to slip through the cracks and go in front of Beis Din and complete a fully kosher conversion, they become Jewish, but just the rest of the Jewish, in terms of, you know, they can read Megillah for you and Yom Yotze, something like that, but they're still not allowed to marry the Jewish people until even after they convert. Because, well, they're still not Jewish, they'll be used to L'Shayach B'Lashon Chiton, that you can't marry them anyway. And there's no point of saying Lo Tischatin Bam, because it's impossible. There's no Kiddush in Tosin. If a Jew hands a non-Jew a ring and says, Arei Mikudeshesli, so nothing happens. It's impossible to create a relationship between a Jew and a non-Jew in that matter. This is going to be discussed when we get to Lo Tischatin Bam as a separate mitzvah. Amalef Shalomar, that we're not allowed to marry any non-Jews, even not marry a technical halachic marriage, which is obviously impossible. You can't marry them in halacha. We're not allowed to associate with them in the manner of marriage. That non-Jews, if you end up marrying each other, then they're going to, their children are not going to be Jewish. Even if the father is Jewish, his father is not Jewish, and the mother is Jewish, and they get a civil marriage. Nevertheless, so the child will be Jewish, but nevertheless, it's not going to be full Jewish raising. We can't rely on the non-Jew to raise a child in a Jewish manner. They're going to say, "Oh, what's, you know, why do we have a Hanukkah menorah and we have a Christmas tree?" It's not going to fly. They're going to be. It's not when you educate a child, it has to be fully Jewish. Nothing else to confuse them. L'rabos kol ha-mesirim, ki yaser es bincha, so anybody who could potentially turn the child away from Judaism is not, you're not allowed to marry. Chmoshikhan shivcha knanis, so that he thinks that the shivcha knanis, the maidservant, is included in this. Mikeva jena Yisraelis gimura b'chlal mesirini, even though she's not allowed to worship Avodah Zarah, she's chayim basically a mitzis, nevertheless, she's not fully Jewish, so therefore, she still might lead your child astray, and there, once you have a child with a Shivcha Knanis, I mean, then the child is going to be an Eved. The child is not going to be fully Jewish. A Jewish man who has a child with a Shivcha Knanis, the child is going to be a slave, so it's also not going to be really related to you. It's going to be a different child. It's not going to be a fully Jewish child anyway, and we have a problem. There are certain mitzvahs that she's not chayav in, v'hein osan she'kasu v'hein b'parsha, b'perush b'parsha, daber al b'nei Yisrael. Mutei kol she'enu b'nei Yisrael. So in the Gemara it says that certain mitzvah slaves are not liable in, are not required to observe. So since that's the case, but this is very few. I mean, the basic mitzvahs, again, it's a funny discussion. We'll have to discuss more when we get to Parshas Vayeschanan, but it's not really our topic for now. It is a funny discussion about what Lo Yeh Kodesh means, but in any event, nobody disagrees about the basic halacha here. You're not allowed to marry a non-Jewish maidservant, and homosexual relations are forbidden. It seems that according to what we've said, that even though it's not necessarily for that pasuk, so the explanation of the targum is the correct one. Ela sha'anu lemeidim oso mimakom acher. Now, even if what it's not exactly from where the Targum learned it, we learned it from a different place. And nevertheless, the did is a true did. The Ramban, Zichron Elvracha, Yachshuv Lav Deli Yekodesh, Leval Naniach Beinenu Ish Mizuma, at least no Skinerach Yishmaelin, Kimo Shamarnu, we shouldn't have someone available for homosexual relations. Well, the Rambam, Zichron Elvracha, Ein Below Bezelav, that is not introducing a separate negative prohibition, but rather, it is a it's a chizuk, it's a strengthening of the mitzvah that we have over here, that we're discussing right now, and as a general prohibition against male homosexual relations. Just emphasizing the idea, like we have many times in Chumash, we have a prohibition being repeated. And this is his language that the Rambam writes in Sefer HaMitzvos discussing this matter. He discusses the other opinions. He says, no, I think I'm correct. Okay, I think you're correct. That this is just a strengthening of the prohibition of homosexual relations. Shelo yazhara lanishkav. Mi shemeomro lo sishkav nilman azhara lashokhe vilanishkav. So he says, so some people said that lo yakodesh is talking about the, like we were discussing before, the passive participant in the act of relations. And zohar lo sishkav mishkevesha is talking about the active participant. So according to that understanding that the Rambam brings and is going to reject, so one pasuk is talking about the active participant and the passive participant have separate prohibitions. That if you do both, you'll be chayev twice. Okay, again, punishment can't necessarily be administered twice, but in theory, you'll be chayev twice. Over Gemara Sanhedrin, Nizbar Shereb Yishmael who Shiyasim Lo Yakodish Azhar LaNishkav. He says this possibility is discussed in the Gemara and rejected. That's the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, that he says, if you're an active and a passive participant in active homosexual relations, even within one knowledge, even if you didn't do two separate acts of Isser. So for example, normally if you have one act of homosexual relations, and 3 days later you have another one, so you could be chayiv twice. But here, even if in the middle of the same act, you switched positions and you switched, and it would still be chayev shtayim according to Rabbi Shmuel, be chayev twice. Rabbi Kiva, whom we paskin like Omer Eino Tzarech, he says this is not. We don't need your interpretation, Rabbi Shmuel. Arei Omer veZocher leSishka Mishkeveisha, that you shall not lie with a man as one lies with a woman. Karibe lo sishachev. Lo sishkav could also be read lo sishachev. You should not be a passive participant either. And lo sishkav in general implies both. So therefore, your chayev only—it's only one prohibition of homosexual relations, and you're not, and you both the passive and the active roles are included. That again, if it's in one act and you played both the active and the passive roles, you're only chayev once. That the active and passive way of roles in the active relations is the same prohibition. It's not significantly different enough to be considered two different things. And Adkan, that's the end of the lashon of the Sefer HaMitzvos. That God wanted the world to be inhabited, and that can only be accomplished by heterosexual relations. Or nowadays, well, you're going to tell me nowadays, well, a gay couple could have surrogacy or IVF or whatever. And maybe they can't have a child. Okay, so it's not, the Torah is, all right, whatever, the Torah is not working with that type of thing, where you're only allowed to do actions that naturally can result in a child.
Except that people after the age of menopause and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Blah,
so
certainly not prohibited from having...
That's an excellent, excellent question. Excellent question. So if that's the case, so how could you... Right, you're allowed to have relations with a woman who's pregnant or nursing or past menopause. So if you need to have it, at least have the potential or maybe be the type of thing that could result in a pregnancy.
Yeah, and it's in the same ballgame.
Low plug, you know.
Right, yeah. Something like a deraisa low plug. That
it's in the pattern, the basic pattern of relations that lead to having.
Right, it's in the basic pattern. It's in the type of relations. You're not going to be Yeah, that's, you're not going to be machalik, so to speak. We don't usually talk about this about the rice, so you're not going to be machalik, so to speak. Well, if that's the case, then say more. Say that when a woman's expecting her period any day, it's not usually the time of ovulation, so there's almost no way that she's going to get pregnant this time, so why should you be able to have relations then?
Or if she's on birth control.
Or certainly, then you would be allowed to take birth control. That's about also, to be a dime.
Also, right. You know, a husband is obligated to give his wife enough, you know, even if she's not incapable.
Correct. Of, so that's what the Sefer Chinuch is about to say, 100%. We'll see that in a second.
You know, that's pretty unique.
What do you mean?
I mean, in the general world, I mean, okay, the secular world is so getting so far removed from Christianity, it doesn't matter anymore. But the general sense, it seems to be, at least up until fairly recently, you know, it's the woman's duty and the man's right,
right.
To have whatever. So, but Judaism's really different.
Well, to be perfectly honest, it's not that the wife is totally in control
oh, no,
and she's
that.
Allowed to withhold if she wants, but...
I could maybe want to take this whole tape, but I want, years ago, had somehow this some subject came up in an office setting, and there's general chit-chat. And I said, you know, Judaism's really different, blah, blah, blah. And a male co-worker said, do my duty anytime. Happy to do my duty anytime.
Okay.
Whatever.
It's interesting that he connects it into the general prohibition, it sounds like, of wasting seed, that in general, in Judaism, we're not allowed to have ejaculations that, at least on purpose, that cannot result in pregnancy. But again, you are allowed, but ejaculation in the context of normal marital relations is always permissible, no matter what the time of the woman's lifespan or the month. I mean, obviously, during either, you're not allowed at all, but the Seder. But that's always allowed. So he considers this, even though it doesn't say explicitly in the Torah anywhere that you're not allowed to weigh seed. The Erev Onan, etc., exactly what the pshat in that exact maisa was, is a topic of a different discussion. But he considers this part of wasting seed, that it's like an act of relations that cannot have any possibility of positive coming out of it. Why? Because it doesn't have the possibility of having a child, and it doesn't have a kiyum of mitzvahs ona. Right. Like was commented before, that even at a time when a woman cannot become pregnant, so the husband has a requirement to sexually fulfill his wife's needs. But, I mean, you're going to argue to me, if you're of a very liberal persuasion, and I just thought of this as I was reading the Sefer Chinuch, you're tell me, but that's circular. You can say that heterosexual marital relations are always permissible in a mitzvah because there's mitzvahs ona. That's only because the Torah forbids homosexual relations. Okay. I'm saying it's circular. I'm saying, but the heterosexual relations were koveh as the standard because that's one with the potential to have a child. Okay, right. Whatever.
Actually, it doesn't appear as though he, you know, the idea that Mishka Zachar is you know, called Toeva. It doesn't seem to make any particular impression on the...
Right, but a lot of things in the Torah are called Toeva. Yeah,
right. Okay, I mean, right. Yeah, again, in the Haredi, invective, you know, Toeva is used, you know,
is usually
right.
used.
Yeah,
about,
right.
It's not used about having...
It's not used about, you know, right. Well, the other things, the Torah may call, you know, interesting enough.
Right.
But there's
You're
no
right.
sense here that there's a specific, repulsiveness among more than any other wonderful thing we've been reading about, you know, like his...
Well, sort of. I don't know. It's the only one of the Arayos that's called Toeva, right? Someone called a Chesed. A Chesed also means something abomination. It's in different words. Yeah, you're right. It's not necessarily, within the text of the Torah, you don't necessarily get the impression that it's something above and beyond in terms of repulsiveness.
You do or you don't?
You don't, I think.
You don't, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, Toeva, right, like you said, the weights and measures, there are a lot of things that are called Toeva in the Torah.
And nowadays...
I mean, it's to emphasize it, because you might think it's... You're right, because this you might think is not so bad. Okay, so you do it once, what's the big deal? Then you're going to get... then you are going to get married, you're going to have a nice family, whatever. So you were nishal once, so what's the big deal? So it's a Toeva, that Be'etzim is repulsive. Yeah.
It's interesting, some circles today, it's very clear that people think weight, two sets of weights and measures or that type of thing is much more horrible than gay marriage. Much more.
That's the problem. They're both bad. Yeah, it's not one is worse than the other.
Right.
I mean, okay, one's Israel Keelah, one's not Israel Keelah, but it's not that.
Well, they think the same thing about voting Republican, so, you know.
That's
that ballpark, yes. I understand
the point.
I did once
wrote repulsive.
Okay. Here we're getting the repulsiveness. Mm-hmm. That this dirty thing is disgusting and ugly, extremely, in Be'enei Kol Baal Seichel, in terms of anybody who's thinking straight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Again, we can have, in terms of the Shorshei HaMitzvah over here, we can have people nowadays perhaps not necessarily wanting to accept all these things, but in any event, the Shorshei HaMitzvah are not the be-all and end-all, and we just have to accept what it says in the Torah, of course, that God has whatever reason that he has for forbidding these things. A person whose tachlis in life is not to eat and drink and be merry and have relations anytime just for the sake of pleasure, but rather somebody who's created to serve God should not be degraded with these ugly, disgusting types of things. Mizeh Shorish, different again perceptions than perhaps most people have nowadays, but whatever. Mizeh Shorish, Amar Zichronon Livracha, Shosr L'Hasi Yisha L'Kan Dich Ein Znusu. So it says from this, interesting that he compares it over here to a heterosexual thing, which is that you're not an adult woman should not marry a minor man. Why? That it's like znus. It's like it gives the impression of being like harlotry.
Minor being under the age of bar mitzvah?
Yeah. V'chein shelo yisa adam zkeino v'akara sheinu rielena. That a 20-year-old man should not marry a 80-year-old woman. Or someone who knows that she cannot have a potential of having children.
An 11-year-old girl.
What do you mean?
Are they as upset about the idea of a 20-year-old man marrying an 12-year-old girl?
Yeah, you're not supposed to marry a ketana. That's true. Okay. That is true. You're not supposed to. An adult man is not supposed to marry a ketana. Somebody under 12.
Oh,
okay. 11 is no good. 12 is okay.
Don't start with me. Okay.
No, really, you're not supposed to marry someone who cannot have children. That's the basic idea. That if you know that if a perfectly healthy, 20-30-year-old man is looking for a spouse, is not supposed to marry someone who knows that she can have children. If unfortunately you get married and you find out that you can't, so you can't. But that's the way it works. You're not supposed to marry. Let's say a girl is 12 or 13 or whatever, but maybe she hasn't gotten her period yet, whatever. So presumably she can't have children yet. So you're not supposed to marry her either, even though she's over the age of 12. I mean, nowadays, okay, don't do that. We don't marry adult people, a consenting relationship, whatever.
There was that dreadful thing some years ago.
Midine ha-mitzvah. What are the halakhos of the mitzvah? Ma sh'amru zichrono livracha. She'abal ha-zachar o'shevi zachar alav im shneem gidolim niskalim. That whether you're the active or passive participant in a homosexual act of relations, then, again, male homosexual relations, then if they're both above the age of bar mitzvah, then they receive the penalty of skila, of stoning. Im haya echad gadol, as it says in Parshas Kedoshim, not in Parshas Achrimos, but it says in Parshas Kedoshim. Im haya echad gadol vechad katon ad teisha shanav yom echad shneim peturin midaraisa. If one person is over 13, and the one of the participants is under the age of 9.
Interesting that that's considered a katon. I mean, 9 as opposed to below 13.
Well, there's a separate halacha in the Torah which is not related to the idea of whether you're a godol, you're a bendas, you can be held accountable for your actions, which is over the age of 13. But in terms of sexual matters per se, so a sexual act between two people is not considered to be halachically valid. Not valid, but it doesn't have halachic significance. Legal standing, right? Unless the a female is over the age of 3 and a male is over the age of 9. Right? So, for example, not that we should be having relations at either of those ages, but if you did it, so then that has the valid halachic standing. So, basically, so if, in this case, if a over a 13-year-old male had relations with a male was under 9 years old, so the male who's under 9 years old, since his acts of relations are not considered halakhically valid at all, or that don't have halachic significance, so therefore, even the 13-year-old cannot be held accountable on a deraisa level for the full punishment. So shneim patur mi deraisa, so both would be exempt on a deraisa level from skila. Umakin agodol makas mardus mi derabanan. However, the older participant, the over 13-year-old, you whip him on a derabanan level. Because it's just not appropriate, obviously. Shouldn't be for many reasons. But we give a punishment, it's bad, it's terrible, etc. But since one of the participants was under the age of 9, then it cannot have the full halachic significance of a relation.
Just to be not exactly devil's advocate, but okay, picture 2 13, 14-year-old boy and a girl. They're fooling around, whatever, or there's rape, or whatever. The fooling around is not great. Rape's another thing. But you're saying that the 13-year-old boy with God help us, a 9-year-old girl, I'd like to kill some of them.
If a 13-year-old, what do you mean?
If a 13-year-old boy tries to rape a 9-year-old girl,
so she
throw the book at him.
No, but that's a full act of relations in halakha.
Yeah.
So he would be punished for whatever it is.
Okay.
Because she's over 3.
Oh, and she's, what if she was under 3?
Under 3, so it would be the same thing. Oh. You would receive whatever punishment the Bezdin administered,
okay.
But you wouldn't be liable for the full derisa punishment.
It's a question of just categories. It's not a question of any value judgment. Okay. Right. You're not going to get shlish and shabbos for any of these things, okay? I guarantee.
Right. V'imaya echad kadon shelo higia lechal shos v'zreishona v'yom echad, ava mikoma komiteisha shonim v'yom echad v'omala. So let's say a 10-year-old boy has relations with someone who's over the age of 13, a male who's over the age of 13. Hagodol niskal, so the person who's over 13, since he's held accountable for his actions, he'll receive the penalty of stoning, but the 10-year-old won't, because the 10-year-old is not a bar mitzvah yet. But the older person can receive the full penalty of stoning due to his active relations with a 10-year-old, because the 10-year-old's over the age of 9. So it's not Tolui Zeb Bezeh that both have to have stone. It could be that you have the two people engaging in one act, that one person is stoned and the other person is not.
Because of the age thing.
Right. So if that's the case, Hagodol Niskal Ben Sheba Alavo Sheheviu Alatzu, it doesn't matter whether they were active or the passive participants again, the Katan Pater Midaraisa, and the 10-year-old, whatever, is exempt on the Daraisa level, Umakin also be the Rabbanan. But nevertheless, on the Rabbanan level, you're still going to hit him because he should know better. A 10-year-old should be, is the way he gia lechinuch, they should be taught according to what the correct laws of the Torah are, and therefore the Bezdin is going to administer some sort of lashes that are commensurate with the strength of this 10-year-old.
Do they have any provision for what we see, unfortunately, too much of today with, in the Goyish world, the priest and the altar boys and
teachers. So the Goyish world
and our world too, unfortunately.
So the Goyish world is different because when it comes to Bnei Noach, that non-Jews, even though they're also not allowed to have any of these forbidden relationships that we've listed until most of them, not all of them, but they don't have these rules of ages. The Shiurim are only relevant for Jews. So, for example, a Jew, if he eats something that's not kosher, so you're not liable for the penalty until you eat a kezias. You have to have a shear the size of an olive. A non-Jew, if he eats something he's not allowed to eat, aver min hachai, a limb torn from a live animal, so there's no shear. As soon as he eats even the tiniest amount, then he is liable for the penalty. And the same thing over here, you don't go by the ages over here. That as soon as the non-Jew knows, is old enough to know better, then you administer the full penalty.
But what I was really thinking of was,
The fundamental thing about the ages, though, is that under a certain age, essentially the act is not considered a sexual act. It's not really,
right.
In other words, it's an act of, obviously, a terrible act of violence and depravity and so forth, but it is not per se
correct.
A sexual act, which comes in under this halacha category, and this particular iser of a sexual act.
It comes under other...
Right.
Depravity not otherwise specified, yeah.
Right. Good. So, ve'echad, ba'al ha-zachar, well, I also have to figure out what they did. Because I would imagine that in many cases of pedophilia like this, it's not I mean, that is not actual Mishkav Zohar. It could be other types of sexual intimacy that don't fall under the actual category. So you're liable whether you have relations with an actual full male or you have relations with an androgynous, which is very interesting because an androgynous is someone who is a hermaphrodite. He has both male and female organs. So you might think, okay, so you're not sure. It's some sort of male-female type of thing. So this is not Mishkav Zohar. So it says, since the Torah, one of the drushes, many drushes, from the fact that it says Mishkevei Isha, that's talking about more than one type of relations, is that it's just a Gzeres HaKosov, that you're liable for having anal intercourse with an androgynous, right? So an androgynous has... again, both male and female organs in the front, and then, of course, there's only one hole that you could have potentially have relations with that's the same for both a male and a female. So presumably, I guess, if he uses his male organ to have relations with you, so I guess that would be the same. But here it's really talking about, I haven't seen that explicitly discussed, but I assume that's the same. But here it's really talking about if you have anal intercourse with an androgynous, so you're chayev for Mishkav Zohar, even though there's one set of female organs in the front of this androgynous. Aval derech nitvuso pater midaraisu makenoso midarabanan. But if you have intercourse with the female organ of this androgynous, then it's only aser midarabanan, you have makas mardus. The rabbinic type of lashes. Ve'atumtum sofek yeshbo. A tumtum is somebody who has a thick membrane covering the genitals, and you're not sure whether this person is a male or female. So therefore, it'll be prohibited on a derabbanan level. So what do you mean on a derabbanan level? So the commentators go over here, like the Minchas Chinuch points out, that this must be going like the Rambam's opinion that anytime there's a suffix, anytime there's a legitimate full doubt, 50-50 chance whether you're going to violate a rabbinic Torah prohibition or not. So we know that we have a principle, suffik deraisa l'chumra, suffik derabbanan l'kula, that when you have a doubt about a biblical prohibition, you must act stringently, and if you have a doubt about a rabbinic prohibition, then you have a right to act lenially. Again, we're talking about a full doubt, not just some inkling in your head. So if that's the case, so you might say that at a deraisa level, so you'd be allowed to have relations with the tumtum, because it's suffik, you don't know whether this person is a male or female. I'm sorry. So there's a question, I skipped a step to this argument. There's a disagreement between the Rambam and the Rashba, famously. The Rambam holds that the concept of Sofik Deraisa L'chumra, that when you have a doubt as to a biblical prohibition, you have to act stringently, whether that concept is in itself a biblical obligation or it's only a rabbinic obligation. So the Rambam says it's only a rabbinic obligation, that the rabbis, that on a Deraisa level, if you're working within the realm of completely on a Deraisa, when you have a full doubt as to whether something is permissible or not, even an Isser Deraisa, you're allowed to act lenially, because the Torah only prohibited things that are Vadai. It's very hard to, imagine. I mean, that wouldn't apply to something like, let's say, if you find a piece of meat on the street in New York, maybe it's kosher, maybe it's not, because the vast majority of places are not kosher. So you presume, called the parish, Miruba parish, it wouldn't necessarily apply to any time you had a doubt. But there was a legitimate 50-50 chance. If you found it maybe in an apartment building,
if you found it in Muncie,
then it's more, right. That's a different rule, yeah. Yeah, right. Seder. But the rabbis have said that in order to give more covet, whatever, to the biblical prohibitions, they said you had to act stringently whenever they came to a biblical prohibition. But rabbinic prohibitions, you're allowed to act lenially. The rash.
Is that covet? I thought it was about the
offenses, whatever.
Standing.
Right. They want to give it a greater standing. They want to make sure you don't violate prohibitions, right, because this is going to get fuzzy in people's heads. You're right. Many reasons. But the Rashba says, he disagrees strongly with the Rambam. He says that's not true. That on a deraisa level, in most cases, you are required to act stringently when you have a doubt. There are certain things like where it says, I believe explicitly, that a doubt is allowed on a biblical level. Like it says, Lo yovo mamzer bikal Hashem. You're not allowed to marry a mamzer. So on the biblical level, it's only mamzer vadai. But anytime there's a doubt as to whether a person's a mamzer, on a deraisa level, they'll be allowed to get married. That the rabbis didn't always go with that either. So Anyway, so he's the Sefer HaChinuch over here seems to be going according to the opinion of the Rambam that a tumtum, according to the Rashba, would seem that a tumtum you're not allowed to have relations with on a deraisa level because there's a doubt as to whether this person is a male or female. So the concept of suffik deraisa l'chumra is a deraisa type of concept. And he would say it's asur deraisa, but according to the Rambam, it might be only asur derabanan. So the commentators over here, like the Minchas Chinuch, says that maybe even the Rambam agrees that when it's a shayla of an iser kari, so when it's a really stringent prohibition, that maybe it's a suffing deraisa l'chumra is even on the deraisa level. And, the commentators discussed that maybe the difference between when it's ischazik isura, when you know that there's a prohibition over here, let's say you have two pieces of meat. You knew there were two pieces of meat here, now only one is left. You don't know whether it's the kosher or the non-kosher ones. You knew there was a non-kosher piece of meat here, so that might be... that might be the only time when it's suffik derabana, deraisa l'chumra on a deraisa level, even according to the Rambam. Here there's no ischazik isura, whatever it is. Because we don't know, even from the person's birth, we have no idea whether the person is a male or female. So don't do it, basically. Don't have relations with tumtum. The androgynous is very interesting. Mutar lisa isha. That a hermaphrodite is allowed to marry a woman. Because again, even though he has some, this person has some female aspects to them, the prohibition of female homosexual relations is on a much lower level. So therefore, since not only this person is not a vadai female, this person has male organs too. So therefore, that person is allowed to marry a woman. Very interesting.
They can find one.
Ooh, mishum ovei chashash mishkav zachor asur zichron levracha shelo limsor tinok yisrael legoy lamed sefer omnus. That because of the concern for homosexual relations, we're not allowed to. You're not allowed to send your child to a non-Jewish teacher to teach literature or some type of profession.
You mean the male child?
Yeah, male child. Female child would be different because of Yichud, whatever. I mean, that would be a whole different
thing. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because non-Jews are generally presumed to be suspected of engaging in homosexual relations. Which, unfortunately, as we were talking about the teachers earlier, unfortunately, this is not limited to non-Jews. I mean, in classical sources in Shulchan Aruch, it says there's a difference, there's this agreement in the Gemara in Kiddushin, the Mishnah really, between Rabbi Yehuda and the rabbis regarding the prohibition of Yichud. That Rabbi Yehuda says that two single men should not sleep together in a sleeping bag, whatever, some type of bed. Again, remember, people didn't wear clothes to bed necessarily in those days.
So cold.
Anyway, they're not allowed, two single men are not allowed to sleep together because they might get tempted. There are no women available, so here's the next best thing. And the rabbis say, no, Jewish people are not suspected of engaging in homosexual relations. So... some people say that nowadays we should be more nizer in these things. Now that everything is more parutz, that it's so much more common in general society that the homosexual relations are completely normalized in the non-Jewish world for the most part, except for religious groups, basically, conservative groups,
right.
Then we have to be extra careful about this nowadays.
I thought there was the Mechaber, in fact, was Machmir on it, because he lived in Ottoman, you know, the Ottoman Empire, where such things, in fact, were more common. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Ramah said, no, nobody's ever heard such a thing. Catholic Poland, you know.
Yeah.
Right, and that's in those days, too. Now the Catholic people are not as nice, or as maybe
the
they used to be.
The church's position hasn't changed, but the behavior of the Am has changed.
Uh-huh, right. Right, so it's actually interesting that some people comment when this line is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. So some of the commentators say, "Oh, that was in the olden days. Nowadays, it's okay because nowadays, like you said, so our non-Jewish neighbors have never heard of any of them engaging in homosexual relations. So therefore, it's fine nowadays." So now, contemporary times, we have to go back to the a couple steps. That it's proper to be nisar in this nowadays as well. And say in general, people should be more careful about yichud with two males together, which we're not necessarily so careful about in the classical sources. So, in a lot of yeshivas, they have only rooms with at least three students in them.
They were
three,
four reason, students. Isn't it?
I mean, at YU, they still have two to a room in a lot of rooms. We haven't caught up yet. B'noi Yisr Zeh, b'chol makom v'chol zman, this is in all places and all times. V'over Allah, and if you violate it, mikevan shehera, kilomar shechnis rosho atara bilvad, that means you put in the glands only, even if you don't insert the entire member. Chayev skila kemoshe minus, then you're liable for the penalty of stoning. And again, we're talking about inserting the glands. We have to emphasize that when the Torah is talking about homosexual relations, it's talking specifically about anal intercourse and not any other type of sexual intimacy that could occur between two men. Again, that's definitely forbidden, either because of lo sikrivu legalo serva, you not get close. We discussed that before, that whether it applies to Mishkav Zachar also, or because of causing yourself sexual excitement without a legitimate outlet, hihurim, things like that. And probably both. But you don't receive the penalty unless you engage in anal intercourse, which is what the Torah is really talking about over here. And in fact, this is the source in the Torah for the fact that anal intercourse is considered a full act of relations in halacha in a heterosexual couple as well. That says, Mishkeve Isha, Zachar Lusishka, Mishkeve Isha, and the manners, that one lies with a woman. So what do you mean manners? There's only one way you can have homosexual intercourse. But, so why does it say in the plural? It's teaching you that there are two methods in terms of for women that have full relations in halacha, that both vaginal and anal intercourse are considered full relations in halacha, and there's no difference between the two except for shivcha charufa, for non-Jews maybe a little bit, but for the vast majority of prohibitions in the Torah, they're both considered to be full. It's called bia kedarka, the normal way, shiloh kedarka, the non-normal way. They're both considered full acts of relations in halacha, and you'll be punished accordingly. And if there are no witnesses and a warning, then you're chayev kares on purpose. And if you did it accidentally, then you have to bring a sin offering. That, unfortunately, is part of the reason that we Jews have to be on guard. Again, there's been a lot of quote-unquote progress in this matter, so it's very hard to turn back the clock. But we have to be on guard also, that we have to we have to do the best we can to make sure that homosexual relationships are not normalized in secular culture as well, because it's not only forbidden for Jews, not our private religious thing. We believe that all descendants of Noah, all non-Jews as well, are not allowed to engage in homosexual relationships. Again, of this matter. So we said before, we pointed out that slaves have no relationships. In other words, that a slave is allowed to marry, if a person becomes a slave and then the person's mother becomes a slave after to a Jewish person, so technically they're allowed to get married.
What?
Because they have no relationship to each other, because they've taken an intermediate stop.
It's like Eros.
Yeah,
no, Geirus is also their abundant, but here they've taken an intermediate stop, and they have no relationship to each other whatsoever.
But are they permanent? If they're not permanent slaves, if they're just basically indentured servants?
No, they're permanent slaves.
Evakanani, not every.
Right, not every Evakanani, right. Non-Jew slaves. So if they get freed and they become full Jews, and they both become full Jews, then yeah, they won't be allowed to marry each other. But in the meantime, though, they're both slaves. They're allowed to get married. So even so, even though we find that there's basically no way that a Eved Kenani or a Shifcha Kenanis could be liable for having relations with an Erva because they have no relationships, and most of the Arayos are based on the fact that there's a relationship over here. Nevertheless, the Rambam says that they will be liable for having homosexual relations. They can marry their mother or sister. They're not non-Jewish anymore. They're not Jewish yet, so they can't be related to someone.
Did this ever happen?
I don't think most people would want to do this, even if it was permissible. It's just telling you what the technical halachic status is. They won't be punished if they have relations with a person. So here, the prohibitions of bestiality and homosexuality have nothing to do with relationships. They're prohibited for all people in the world equally. So therefore, even a slave will be prohibited in this manner. And the Ravid comments on the Rambam says, oh, I think that it makes sense that this would be the case, that the slaves would be liable for homosexual relations as well. So the Ravid Usually he says, has a hasaga. Usually the Rava disagrees with the Rambam. He says, you know, the Rambam is ridiculous. He can't, how could he write this? This doesn't make any sense. Here the Ravid agrees so much with the Rambam. He says, why did he say yay royally? It seems to me. He says, of course that's true. So anyway, interesting.
Your may vary.
Again, so what, I don't have time right now to discuss all the hashkafas of this, that if people have inborn desires for this, how can it be that Torah says some? The answer is sometimes life is very difficult. But in any event, the gzera that the rabbis made was only made by full gerim, full converts, that you're not allowed to marry your biological relatives, even if you both convert and you're technically not related to each other, because that was probably much more common. That's, we care more what the full converts think, because we wanted them to be real parts of the Jewish people, whereas the slaves, you know, you can think what you want. We go according to the strict halacha.